Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her My People show. I am your host, Mark Call, and this, of course, is the show where we talk about that verse in Revelation 18:4 that says, "Come out of her, my people, don't participate with her sins so that you don't partake of the plagues." And certainly, as I've said for a long time now, the plagues have become more and more obvious. The sins have been obvious for longer than that. And this week, as even more than we've seen for the last several months and the last almost 2 years at this point, things have not only come to a head, arguably they've gone off the cliff. It probably is too late to save America with a K at this point. The question is whether or not there'll be a remnant that will survive. And if that doesn't kind of tip you off up front that what I'm going to talk about today is going to be uncomfortable, and I think it's time we faced up to it. And in fact, I want to connect a whole lot of dots, and I guess I'll issue a warning at this point as well, because I'm not going to pull any punches. Most of you regular listeners are already used to that. But when it comes to matters of life and death and beyond, and we're way beyond just life and death at this point, we had better admit what's happening, because the consequences are beyond death. And that, I think, is going to be the title of the show. If I was going to kind of try to put my finger on it, it amounts to a culture of death. Not like I haven't talked about this before, but certainly, no question about it, the modern leftist, call it what you want, Hollywood-based, Disney-based, let's-kill-all-the-kiddies-based culture of death is pervasive. And I know most people, having been immersed in it, submersed in it, literally having their noses rubbed in it for so long, may have difficulty seeing it, kind of like a fish has difficulty understanding what he's swimming in, even when it gets polluted and becomes a cesspool. But here we are. So let me start off this way. I watch, especially this week, I've seen America's tyrants and usurpers and wannabe dictators, they're very close to being de facto dictators, literally dancing on the graves of yet more dead children in the latest gun-free killing zone mass murder. I'm talking about Uvalde, Texas. I can't believe there's anybody that hasn't heard about it at this point. But what I guarantee you've been hearing more than anything is propaganda, and let's be kind here, the crap that comes out of the back of a bull, for the most part. Because what they want to focus on is trivial, at least when it comes to the actual causes, and that is honest, gun-free, well, no, gun-owning, who, if they get their way, will soon be gun-free Americans. The whole concept, in other words, of actual rights that were written in genuine print, like shall not be infringed, and some others that we'll talk about today in the course of going over how we got here and what it means. But ultimately, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on the war on what's left of the Bill of Rights, simply because, I'll say this up front, I may end up repeating it, but anybody clueless enough at this point to ignore the obvious and not only ineffective, counterproductive, but deadly push for more and more gun control, in spite of the fact that any way you slice it, it doesn't work. Not only it doesn't work, but when it turns out that all, I mean literally all, of the mass murders happen in gun-free killing zones, you got to ask, maybe the only people who aren't that stupid are the criminals who know, that's where you got to do a crime if you want to get away with it, whether it's robbing somebody or killing some kids. Whatever your proclivity may be, you better make sure that the people who are getting victimized aren't armed. And that, of course, is exactly why the Biden regime and the other criminals want to make sure that when they victimize what's left of America, we aren't armed. Who are we kidding? They lie to the American people about it, but they know darn well that an armed citizenry is a threat. And that's why there is so much of an attempt to get rid of it. So let me finish the statement. Anybody clueless enough not to understand that, the obvious connection, the fact that these killings inevitably happen in gun-free killing zone, and they want more gun control, in spite of the idiocy and the proof, volumes at this point, lots of dead bodies, that it doesn't work. Well, they're kind of like a junkie who's in withdrawal, jonesing for more meth or heroin. And the leftists are just like that. They encourage, they facilitate the addiction. And, we can't handle the withdrawal symptoms. What's the withdrawal symptoms? A society returning to normal and getting away from this culture of death. So that is, at least it's a way to kick things off. But what I want to do today is go a bit deeper, talk about some of the other aspects of all of this. I think there are some connections right off the top that are obvious. For one, notice what we've seen just over the last few weeks, right? The leaked decision yet to emerge from the Supreme Court that would say, you know, Roe v. Wade and the follow-ups are not just bad law, they're downright crappy, and they usurp constitutional principles, destroy them, turn them around the head, and so forth. But what was the response of the knee-jerk left? Well, they worship abortion. You know, you don't have a right, if you're a woman, to prevent somebody from raping you by using a firearm or any other method to stop them. You don't have a right to say no to being groped in a public place, like an airport, by some pervert who wants to look and see what you've got using his naked body scanner, or check out your purse. We don't need no stinking warrant. No, the only right that any American has, my body, my choice. Can you defend it? Can you prevent it from being poison poked? Can you say, I don't want to wear a mask and suffer oxygen deprivation? Nope. But you can kill kids. Well, hey, is it any surprise then that they're getting really good at killing kids in the public cesspools where they know that nobody's going to shoot back, at least not for 90 minutes like we saw this week? All right. The same people, of course, are really wanting to Zyklon B the kids. Doesn't matter that kids don't actually suffer from the wiles of the poison. COVID-19 84 pandemic. In other words, very few kids died. Lots more kids now have died that they've been poison poking them, for sure. They don't just die of COVID. They're dying of myocarditis, pericarditis, strokes, heart attacks, clots, things that usually don't affect kids until they get to be 30 or 40 or 60 years older. But in any case, they started with the 5 to 12 year olds and said, oh, that's good. We can kill even younger ones. Let's kill some toddlers. I got to ask, if they want to abort kids before they're born, if they're anxious to poison them once they start to toddle around, is it any surprise that they want to keep killing them and putting them in gun-free killing zones once they can walk around? They've already shown you that they want to dumb them down so that they're good little slaves and don't even know what's happening to them. And that leads me to where I really want to spend some the first few minutes here going into some depth, what I call the public schools. And you can't see it in print, and those that are the most subject to being victims here wouldn't be able to read it or understand the difference anyway. But I spell that P-U-B-L-I-K-S-K-O-O-L-S. Yeah, these are the cesspools of indoctrination, where the only thing you can guarantee that isn't going to be taught are things like thinking, understanding cause and effect. Yeah, reading, writing, and arithmetic, much less American history. Maybe science, even knowing what science is. They're taught to emote rather than to think. And over just the last few years, here's what we've seen in the public schools. Let's talk about grooming, right? Sexualization. It started to go younger and younger in age. Then it became anti-sex completely. The only kind of sex you're not going to be allowed to think about is between a man and a woman. We got, cisgender. They even put a label on it so they can demonize it. Now, if you want to talk about fisting in the third grade, hey, that's fine. If it's anti-sex in general, if it's talking about sodomy or now bestiality is on the agenda, in other words, if the Bible says don't do it, public schools will teach it, they will subsidize it, they'll mandate that your kids learn about it. They're talking about castration, literally. They are talking about transgender and telling kids, you know, if there was a God, obviously he screwed up. He put a man in a woman's body or vice versa. You got a penis hanging there. That doesn't mean anything. Choose your gender and let's whack that thing off of there. They've gone so far on the abomination scale that they're doing genital mutilation, literally spaying and castrating young kids in the public cesspools, chemical hormones, chemicals injections, hormones injections. If it's anti-Yah, in other words, they're all for it. And as you know, this started decades ago, and that we've moved on down, literally on down the cesspool ever since. And even the minor things that we saw years ago, like crappy food, leading to a more subtle form of destruction of kids' immune system. And of course, and I'll come back to this, the dumbing down of kids in American schools. Now, that leads me to where I want to start off, because as I was thinking about this, I realized, you know, we don't spend a lot of time, and I haven't spent a lot of time in quite a while in this show, talking about some of the processes involved in bringing about a culture of death. But where I want to end up today is with a conclusion. So I'll outline where it is I think we're headed. And all you got to do is look and see how successful it's been. How do you take one of the most productive, one of the most God-fearing, yes, I'll use that term in this context, cultures in the history of the entire planet? generally based on freedom. No, there have been some exceptions along the way, people that weren't as free as others. It was never perfect, but they've worked really hard to destroy even that and make it a whole hell of a lot, and I choose that term explicitly, worse. This culture of death. That's the answer, folks. You take everything that made the country great. You take all of the obedience to the instruction that was written in Scripture, which was once actually taught. It was taught by parents in their homes, and it was taught even after the advent of the public schools, and I'll come back to that, like I said, here in a second, to the point where, well, we destroy that, get rid of God in the schools, and destroy everything that represents free enterprise, honest weights and measures, things that I talk about here every week. In other words, again, if the God of the Bible says do it, it brings a blessing. They say we're not going to do it, we're going to destroy it, we're going to turn it on its head, we're going to call evil good and good evil, we're going to subsidize the stuff that he calls abomination and says carries a death penalty, we're going to teach it to your kids whether you like it or not, oh yeah, and we're going to inject them too, and when that fails, we'll put them in a place where Big Brother's little false flag marionettes can come in and kill them. Do I believe that what happened to this most recent false flag was deliberate? Or was it just the kind of thing that you get when you do really stupid stuff, expecting a different result over and over again? Well, I'll say this. It was awfully well planned for the kind of idiocy that we see here. Almost like this guy had some coaching. Certainly, like we've seen over and over again, there are questions that aren't going to be asked by the waste stream, pieces that don't fit. For example, we know that this guy was well known to police, the alleged single lone gunman shooter there. We know that he was indoctrinated. We know that he was a loner and he had all the kind of characteristics that should have marked him as a standout for this. Matter of fact, it was so obvious that you got to wonder, was he on SSRI drugs? Most mass murderers are, and you're not going to be allowed to hear about that. They'll tell you exactly what make and model of firearm he bought. Isn't it funny? If somebody uses a truck to run down a bunch of people in Paris, they don't tell you that it's so important that that particular make and model of big truck be banned, do they? What they don't want to tell you is what form of SSRI he was on. Was it Prozac? Was it Luvox? Was it some other modification of the brain kind of a thing? All right. Well, the point is, folks, all of this stuff is being talked about, but the only things that aren't being talked about are what's important in it anyway. And again, it all goes back to this idea of dumbing down and literacy and how do you get rid of the creator of the universe? How do you destroy all of those things that made this the greatest country on earth, not only in our lifetimes, but arguably in history, and replace it with a literal hell on earth? Just look and see what they're doing. And as you might suspect by this point, there's a lot of these things that intertwine. It literally takes decades to carry out this process. So here's where I want to go next. I mentioned this idea of literacy and some of the things that we can see that happened along the way. One of which, and I'll mention this, you've probably heard about it, the system of public indoctrination that was put into the American, well, first colonies, and then by this time they were American states, seems to have come from Prussia in Europe, and it was all about creating good little Prussian slaves or good little citizens of the almighty state. We're talking 1840s or 1850s in this case, but there's more to it. And where I want to go next are a couple of stories that you can double check and find out. One of them has to do with how about the time of the American founding, the colonial era, literacy in early America. And I actually found an article from colonialwilliamsburg.org and their research that points out, written there by Jack Lynch is the author's name here, freedom of the press, he says, was prominent in the minds of the founders. The First Amendment's protection of free expression features in just about every story of the development of the United States. But freedom of the press doesn't count for much without an audience to read what is printed. Only a literate population makes the right to a free press meaningful. And isn't that the key? And there's more to it even than this, and I'm going to focus on some elements of that as I go through here. He noted that Thomas Jefferson said free speech alone wasn't enough to guarantee a healthy republic. He wrote a letter to Charles Yancey, prominent Virginia legislator, in 1816. This is a famous line. When the press is free and every man able to read, all is safe. So, clearly, literacy, says the author here, is among the keys to understanding the early chapters of the story of America, but it's difficult to make any overarching claims. Evidence is hard to find because the act of reading doesn't really leave any traces in itself. Historians have to look for indirect evidence. Some of it's clear. If there's a surviving letter or diary in someone's handwriting, for example, that pretty well proves the writer was literate, and not only could they read, but obviously they could write. The presence of books in a will is also persuasive, but letters and diaries rarely survive. Only about one man in four, for example, left a will. Besides, lots of times people don't list everything, including books, although those were expensive, not as much so as they were a few hundred years earlier, but they didn't list everything in a household, so the wills don't necessarily tell you all you need to know about the literacy of a larger population. They talk about other ways you can look at it, but records are still spotty. There are people who never went to school, obviously, especially in this era, that were homeschooled. It was a big deal. They became proficient readers. And then in the 1960s, you had two historians, Bernard Balin and Lawrence Creman, who reminded their colleagues, and this is ever so much truer today, education is not synonymous with schooling. Okay, there's more here about whether or not a signature in a register, as opposed to just putting an X, shows that the writer was literate, but clearly there are false positives. Sometimes people just only learned how to write their name, but they couldn't do anything else. In 1974, there was a University of Montana scholar named Kenneth Lockridge who wrote a groundbreaking book entitled Literacy in Colonial New England. He put together as much information as was available from legal records, and he offered some provisional conclusions, saying that, among other things, white male New Englanders, about 60% of the population he estimated was literate, between the years 1650 and 1670. Now, that's 100 years plus before America's founding. That figure rose to 85% by the late 1750s and early 1760s. It was estimated to be 90% by the time of the founding era and the constitutional time frame and the Bill of Rights and so forth, which is very high. Matter of fact, in Boston, they thought it probably came close to 100% by the end of the century. And clearly, American literacy was very high by European standards. Okay, there's a lot more here. America wrote a magazine called The Columbian Phoenix and Boston Review in 1800. Said the following, America, perhaps more than any other country on the face of the earth, can boast of a larger proportion of inhabitants versed in the rudiments of science, or, for that matter, fewer who are not able to read and write their names. In other words, early America was very literate, and I guess by comparison, what I'm going to note is that's not necessarily the case today. As a matter of fact, at least 10% say modern studies, and by the way, these are probably biased, so you know, if anything, they're lying and telling you it's not as bad as it is. But at least 10% of adult Americans today, that's 30 million plus, and that's before Biden's multiple millions, literally, every year now coming across the southern border, are illiterate, unable to read and write. And that, of course, is a, well, it's a great indicator of where it is that they want us to go, what's being done. This should have been no surprise, says the story here. Originally, literacy was an American obsession. And, okay, there's discussion about women and slaves in here as well. All of those things are interesting, but, well, I want to make one more note from here before I move on. George Washington's will freed all of his slaves when he died, 1799. But less familiar is a provision in his will that said, the Negroes thus bound are, by their masters and mistresses, to be taught to read and write. This is the guy they want to pull down his statue, right? He not only freed his slaves, he wanted them to be taught to read and write and brought to some useful occupation. And many owners in this time frame, say all the historic evidence of the time, saw the idea of teaching their slaves to at least read the Bible as somewhat of a religious obligation. Now, this story goes on to say what you'll find in most of these studies of literacy. Literacy itself is the first step on the path to freedom. Some of them say, like this one, the slaves knew this better than anyone. And, well, that leads me to this next piece, because here is a little bit more left-leaning, more recent article. This comes from ResilientEducator.com. And if you see the ads on the page here when I brought it up, you get an idea. But anyway, they also admit more than 30 million adults in the United States can't read or write or do basic math above a third grade level. Ah, see, here's one of the keys, folks. Exactly what constitutes literacy? See Jane run, right? Throw the ball. That's not even so much a requirement nowadays to be literate, I would suggest, is learning what shall not be infringed means, or even what the words shall not, if you see them on a piece of paper, mean. Certainly those who can't read or write aren't able to ascertain why it is that more of the hair of the dog, more gun control results in more dead kids, and so forth. Children whose parents have low literacy levels have a three-quarter chance of being at the lowest reading levels themselves. 75% of state prison inmates either are low literate or they didn't even complete high school. And remember, completing high school nowadays doesn't mean you can read or write. But I guarantee you, those people who can't read and write, they probably are taking their free pokes. What do you think? Here's the place where this story gets interesting from the resilient educator. You want to understand the state of illiteracy or literacy in today's U.S., you better go back to the beginning, because literacy has long been used as a method of social control and oppression. Throughout much of history, the ability to read was something that only privileged upper-class white men were allowed to learn. School wasn't free like it is today. And they do at least admit that this practice of dumbing down some people, as opposed to the rich and the powerful, still continues today. And they go then to talk about slaves and so forth. I like this line. Because slaves, if they learned to read, they could process information. They could read newspapers. They might understand their rights. They might rise up against slavery. This was seen as bad. Slave owners wanted to keep their slaves uneducated and powerless because they understood that literacy represents power. Now, I made a note here. Think about that. Literacy represents power. You know what? This is the same reason, folks, that they, and I mean the slave owners then and the slave owners now, don't want their slaves to be able to read, write, think, connect cause and effect, and they certainly, then or now, they don't want them armed. Can you see the connection here? This is a point that I'm going to also make and try to say, gee, ought to be really obvious. Because one of the things that I see running through these pieces is this claim about slavery and the, oh, no, no, those people, those bad slave owners, they didn't teach black slaves to read. That's true. Now, think about it, they don't teach any slaves to read or write or cipher. So, no, I'm not necessarily either condemning or praising any of the people who have done all of these evil things throughout history. It's a historic fact that it happened. But what the connection is that shouldn't be missed here is the modern slave owners, and by that I'm talking about those who are dancing on the graves of the dead kids, they don't want their slaves to own firearms. They don't want them to learn to read or write or be able to do simple math either, for all of the same and equally obvious reasons. Now, some of the articles, too, focus on women, and they make a similar point. The first one that I mentioned noted that certainly women lagged in terms of reading and writing. There were some statistics. By the late 1700s, only a small fraction of women were able to read. But by 1810, a huge percentage of American women were able to read. So they made and gained back ground rapidly. Part of the reason they suggest, and this is the thing I think is interesting, and it shows the path of education. A lot of women in that time frame became not just moms, and they taught their own kids, they became teachers as well. And that's part of the reason why I think so many things that play together today ought to attract our attention. For example, what happened when moms quit teaching their children and realized, oh, no, we got to have daycare. We're going to turn the public cesspools into daycare centers. Well, we saw it happen. As a matter of fact, some of us can actually remember this process playing out. I know of a time when one household head, you know, one man could earn enough to provide a decent living for his family, for his wife, for his children, and a retirement. Then it took two incomes to get a same or lesser standard of living. Technology helped a bit to delay the inevitable. But taxes and inflation were the reason for that. And now, next, what we're going to see, it takes two incomes, not just to break even and have a same standard. No, it takes two incomes to starve, because there's a process at play here, folks. The idea is, no, it's not just that, for example, public education is good or bad. It's that public education has opened the door to something which continues. And it's being used diabolically, because it's no longer education. It's indoctrination, and that change is at the heart of the culture of death. And we'll be right back. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say great man. Tell me over and over and over and over again, my friend. You don't. Folks, this is the Come Out of Her My People show. I'm your host, Mark Collin. Today, I'm talking about the culture of death and exactly how so many of these pieces ought to fit together. And it really is, where we're headed and where we are, a matter of life and death, that we understand what's being done. I'm going to suggest that just as a book title will remind us, the deliberate dumbing down of America, we're also seeing a deliberate execution of kids, whether we're talking about pre-birth in the case of the abortion sacrament that they are so hot to make sure is ensconced. Doesn't have to be in the Constitution, but it does have to be the supreme law of what now passes for a once free country. And we'll kill kids with the Zyklon B injection once they're 6 months or older. And of course, we'll put them in gun-free killing zones and kill them too. And you've got all of these literal psychopaths. And you know the names I'm talking about. Dancing on the Graves, if you hadn't seen some of them, people like Beto O'Rourke, who was literally, he was called an SOB. The headline here is fabulous. Sick son of a bitch, said the mayor of Uvalde when he tried to break in and capitalize politically on the deaths of those children. You've got Eric Swalwell, who's not just, sleeping with a perhaps dead communist spy at this point, but this was the guy who threatened the American people with nukes if they wouldn't give up their guns. He, too, is dancing on the graves. And actually, and I played this in the news earlier, actually admitted openly that this is a plan. He blames the Republicans for it, but the truth is, clearly, what he's saying is, this is a plan, and you're going to keep getting more dead kids until you give up your guns, Mr. and Mr. America. Turn them all in. All right, when we went to break, I was talking about some of the history of how the public education system became the public cesspools and indoctrination centers. And some of the history, if you go back far enough, America was very literate long before we had widespread so-called public education. Certainly if you've seen the Western movies and stories and TV shows, even Little House on the Prairie and so forth, the school marm, the young lady who would come out and teach kids, well, that was a time when there was increasing literacy. And they had their hearts in the right places, doing the right things, teaching kids to read and write and do arithmetic and so forth. Anybody that's seen the McGuffey readers from the turn of the century, talking about the early 1900s, and sees what a third grade reader would look like, for just one example, would recognize what Charlotte Iserby pointed out and others have pointed out since then. If you honestly compare educational standards in America, the public indoctrination system has lost about one grade level every 10 years. In other words, somebody that graduated from high school with what would have been called a high school education 40 years ago will find that they know a lot more than the kid who graduates from college today, because those who get out of high school today have a 40 years difference. That would be four grade levels. They can't do much more than an eighth grader did in the 1980s, and it gets worse if you go further back in time. But you get the idea. In other words, this dumbing down is progressive and it's continuous. Well, that leads me to a couple of comments from literally one of the foremost books on this subject, and indeed in terms of looking at America in recent memory. It's kind of right up there with G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, when it comes to understanding the Federal Reserve and why what we no longer have is honest money in America. But Charlotte Iserby is a Reagan-era Department of Education official. I had the privilege to interview Charlotte before she passed a long time ago, any number of times. And like I said, this book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, is a classic. I looked online on Amazon. A hardbound copy of this thing, even a paperback, now costs hundreds of dollars. It's out of print. But if you'll look, you can find the PDF, and I encourage people to pull it up. What she has, among other things, is a timeline of all of the elements of what happened going back to the founding era, but particularly focusing on the early part of the 1900s through the complete destruction. When she wrote the book was 1999, and obviously it's simply gotten worse since then. She noted the following. This is in the book, in the chapter about the 1980s, where she said, the effective 80s saw President Ronald Reagan, who had accused the Soviet Union of being an evil empire, signing, get this, education agreements with the Soviet Union, agreements which are still in effect, and setting up a task. Now, this was in 1999 anyway. I don't know if they still are 20 years later. If it's got anything to do with Russia, the Russians have probably disavowed the Soviets, and the United States is becoming what the Soviets were. Anyway, they set up, with Reagan, a task force on private sector initiatives in the White House, which in effect started the ball rolling, as she put it, for public-private partnerships. You know what that means. That's corporate fascism, which is at the heart of the Carnegie Corporation, Mark Tucker, New American School Development Corporation's school-to-work agenda. So in her book, she spends a lot of time talking about things that you've probably heard of, like the 1980s, outcome-based education, all of these highfalutin-sounded programs that basically amount to, hey, let's not teach kids to read, let's not teach them to think, let's not teach them how to do anything useful, oh, let's just teach them how to be good little corporate slaves. Know enough to get by, but we certainly don't want them being independent thinkers, because we don't want the slaves getting uppity on us now, do we? It's ironic, though, continues Charlotte Iserby, that the U.S. Department of Education, remember, Reagan promised to abolish it. One of his biggest failures, he didn't, under the stewardship of a Republican administration, and this is part of what set Charlotte off, among a whole bunch of other things, effectively transformed the essential character of the nation's public schools from teaching, and she puts it in quotes, the traditional conservative role of real schools into workforce training, perceived as then liberal and progressive. And that's part of the key. Now, in the foreword or the introduction to this book, there's one more really interesting story. I remember watching this happen and being upset decades ago when I was exposed to it. I think, probably in school, but certainly when I was at some of the corporate places like IBM early in my engineering career, I saw this and it bugged me then. It goes like this. This is in the introduction. In the fall of 1972, says the author of that part of the book, a small group of students in an introduction to educational psychology class at a Midwestern university saved every single soul in the lifeboat. You know what she's talking about? You remember this story? There's a lifeboat. It's got so many people on board, and you don't have enough food or water for everybody to survive. So your mission is to choose who will die. There you go. It's a culture of death, right? The whole point of this exercise, get used to choosing who will die. Well, the university students here, they were, as it turns out, products of the radical 1960s culture. They thought this was a small group assignment in creativity and ingenuity. So they worked out an intricate plan which enabled them to save every single person in the lifeboat. The professor got agitated. No, he said, wrong. Go back and do it again. Follow the instructions. And the students resisted. Ultimately, they refused to do the exercise. Chalk one up for the human spirit, but it was a short-lived victory. The story goes on to say here, this overloaded lifeboat in crisis story represents a dramatic shift in education. It's no longer education, it's dumbing down. The exercise in which students were compelled to choose which humans were expendable, therefore should be cast off into the water, became a mainstay in classrooms, I'm going to put sick after that word, across the country. Creative solutions were not allowed. Instructions? They must be strictly adhered to. No thinking outside the box. Hell, no thinking at all. In truth, there's only one correct answer to the lifeboat drama. Death. Get used to it. Learn to embrace it. After all, we're talking about a culture of death. This narrowing and dumbing down of intellectual freedom, that marked at least an acceleration point. Lifeboat exercises epitomized the shift in education from academic education, as it had been in the 1800s through about 1960, to values education. You know what that means, antithetical to scripture values, through the 1980s. And the deliberate dumbing down of America, writer Charlotte Iserby chronicles this shift, and the later shift to workforce training, 1980 through 2000. The case is made that the values education period was critical to the transformation of education into indoctrination. And it was all about the belief that values were transient, flexible, situation. To hell with that Bible thing, the idea that there's right and wrong, good and evil, and that we're put here for a purpose by a creator that, remember, hasn't been allowed in the public cesspools for about 60 plus years at this point. Brave new values were integrated into curricula and instruction. The mind of the average American was flexible, conditioned, trained to accept the idea that education exists solely to make good little slaves have at least an acceptable job in a global workforce economy. And with that, she introduces a term that has always bugged me, human capital. It's described by these people to describe children. It implies that humans are expendable. Now, the one I hate, and I saw this in the corporate world all over the place, right? You know it. Human Resources Department. Well, we have mechanical resources. We have capital resources. We have tool resources. What does that mean? They're depreciable assets. You use them up, you throw them away, you buy new ones. Put another slot in the same hole. Human resources, in other words, are, just like the lifeboat, expendable pieces of equipment to be used up and thrown away. All of this is critical to the education reformers' plans. And if you realize that the goal is a culture of death, it fits. In fact, the author suggested, now this, remember, is 22 years ago now, death education in the classroom does seem to be linked to deaths in the classroom. The dumbing down of a nation inevitably leads to the death of a culture. And there is more in here, and it really is. It's an excellent chronicle of what is going on. But I think, at least at this point, that makes the case. There are a whole lot of things that have been happening for a long time. And the irony is, these institutions, and you can name any number of them, hospitals that were once a place where people went to have their lives saved, where medicine and science mattered. And the idea was, first, do no harm. What a concept, right? Similar things about the value of human life. Well, the value of human life, when it becomes a human resource and it's expendable and we worship death instead, and that we want to kill kids and abort them before they come out, and once they're out, we'll put them in gun-free killing zones. Do you see how it all fits together? Is it any wonder that kids are cutting on themselves? They've been taught that you're nothing but a worthless lump of protoplasm, evolved from some slime and then a gorilla, and not valued at all anyway. Isn't it funny, the same people then will talk about all kinds of socialist crap. What's one of my favorites here? The social justice issue. Literacy as social justice was in that other article that I didn't talk about, that part anyway. Why? Because it's a term that's been, it indicates, if you use that term, that you're not able to think and connect the dots. Because social justice is really, let's be honest, anything but. But like so many of these terms, there probably was a time where people thought, yeah, social justice is a good thing. And it indeed was. Kind of like the word gay. It used to mean something different, where now the word has no connection to the original idea of somebody being happy and carefree. What it means is somebody who's going to die young and participate in abominations that the public schools are going to teach you are just fine. Up and down the line, folks, the point here is we can look back at the history of America. We can see literacy and the introduction of some things like public schools and even Thomas Jefferson, the idea that people should be educated and that they should have as close to no cost or low cost education as we can provide. This is a good thing. They were all in favor of literacy. But what happened? It was subverted. Those who knew that we want the slaves to be dumbed down and disarmed cleverly, and this is part of the satanic plan, your host will suggest, manipulated, wove themselves into the system, then subverted it from within and destroyed it. You can talk about the Cloward-Piven hypothesis, building a socialist system and then overloading it so that you can replace it, build back better with something even worse. But it all literally points in the same direction. We have seen what happens when institutions that were once honorable, I guess there was probably even a time when the FBI, even though it was never constitutional, may have been honorable, no more, honestly. The same thing goes for all of these three-letter agencies. They may have been put in place with good intentions. But let's be honest, if you look at the Constitution, there is no constitutional basis for their existence, no enumerated power to allow them to exist. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of things that say that they're forbidden. Primary point being the Federal Reserve. There's no power to create a Federal Reserve. Congress has the power to coin money, not print it. They can't delegate a power they don't have to an entity that shouldn't exist. So up and down the line. Well, and isn't that interesting? Doesn't that kind of connect to literacy? If people can't read the Constitution, if they don't bother, why does it matter anyway? An illiterate population is easy to take advantage of, easy to convince to take the poison poke. And all of this has taken a long time to happen. and it's where we are today. So where I want to go, just in the last couple of minutes, a brief survey of a couple of other items. They fit. I'm not going to spend time on them, and certainly they're going to be more and more prominent over the coming weeks. Monkeypox mania is one of the ways that it's being described. Be afraid, be very afraid. Oh, yes, just when you thought it was safe to come out of the water and not have to wear the idiotic, ineffective face mask. Some of us never did, but at least it was always an issue, right, to go out in public and realize that there were going to be some Karens out there who have been dumbed down to the point where they don't even know that their hypoxia is affecting their thinking, if they ever had it to begin with. And now they're ready to do it again. How stupid do people have to be to fall for the same stunt, right? Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, over and over again. Shame on whoever it is that's doing it and those that are falling for it. So, yeah, simple truth. Look at monkeypox mania. Recognize that this is just something that was obvious, has been in the plan for a long time. C.J. Hopkins, in a story that I won't read but I'll mention here, says, you didn't think that we're going to launch a shot-by-shot remake of COVID, did you? No, no, they're smarter than that. The hopelessly brainwashed new normals, still, they'll go along with it, an apocalyptic pandemic. But it's kind of silly to start the new one before the old one's even been officially canceled. The new normal Reich, though, yeah, here's the question. Are people really this stupid? Are they going to fall for it? Well, answer, I like to quote Heinlein on this score, never underestimate the power of human stupidity, folks. If they have been dumbed down enough, if they have been absorbed into a culture of death enough, even if they don't recognize that that's what they're jonesing for, doesn't it make sense that the same people who bought it hook, line, and sinker the first time, took the poison poke and the boosters and their Zyklon B, and they want kids dead and they want to abort everything that doesn't come out of the womb? Wouldn't it make sense that they're just ready for a yet another repeat of all of that? Then there's this story about communist China. Is it true? There have been stories. J.R. Nyquist, Jeff Nyquist, has been among those that have commented on it. Are they preparing for a D-Day invasion of the continental United States? Well, I've seen some of the evidence and the data from elaborate plans by various high-level top PLA generals and so forth. Don't know if it's true or not. I don't read the Chinese, can't comment on the translation. But still, ask yourself this question. Given that the southern border is open, given that they have their own plant in the White House, given that they have successfully destroyed most of the United States and they want the land, they want to take it over, they don't want to nuke it necessarily. That'll ruin a lot of perfectly good equipment. And they don't care about the human resources. Those are, of course, expendable. Wouldn't it make sense that you're never going to have a better time to invade than when you've got your own man in the White House, the borders are open, and they're literally jonesing to kill everybody they can? Yeah, I look at these stories and I'd say communist China would be fools if they weren't at least thinking about it at this point. So all of this leads in the same direction as we begin to wrap up today. And where I want to go finally is this question of literacy and the culture of death and how it all points together. I'll suggest, and I glossed over this up front, step next to last. If you want to destroy a country, especially a country like this one that has a long history of private firearms ownership. In other words, one of the things that was considered to be the bulwark, the liberty teeth that protected all of the other rights in the Bill of Rights was the idea that an armed citizenry could eventually say, I've had it. I'm not going to take this anymore. And that is why, of course, Big Brother's minions of Satan are so anxious to destroy the Second Amendment and steal all those firearms. Because as long as there's armed people out there, unlike Britain and Australia, where you see what happens next, well, it's a problem. So step minus one, the next to last step on the road to the final solution, is to disarm people. But where I want to close today are some comments of ultimately how all of this ends. And we were warned, by the way, this is literally from this week's Torah portion, for those of us that do the annual cycle, it's Leviticus chapter 26, and it has to do with blessings and cursings. The idea, of course, is if you'll walk in obedience to me, says the creator of the universe, well, all these blessings will happen, but if you don't, no, it's going to be ugly. And 26 verse 14 says the following, if you will not hearken to me, if you won't hear and obey, but instead will not do all of these things, these commandments that I'm laying out before you, and in fact, if you reject my statutes, and if your soul abhors my ordinances, hey, hear that, Joe Biden and Swalwell and Schumer? They abhor everything that the creator of the universe wrote in genuine print. Let's not kid ourselves. They hate his word. so that, back to his word, so that you will not do all my commandments, but instead break my covenant. Here's what I'm going to do to you, he says. I will appoint terror over you. Wait a second. Hadn't that already happened? I will appoint terror over you, even consumption and fever. Monkeypox? COVID? Or maybe just the effects of the Zyklon B injection? So that your eyes will fail, your soul will languish, you'll sow your seed in vain, and your enemies will eat it. Now, the enemies don't necessarily have to be the communist Chinese folks. That might be Big Brother's minions who come in and steal the food. Hey, they've already been doing that, come to think of it. They're stocking up for their underground military bunkers. And, continues the Creator, I'll set my face against you, and you shall be smitten before your enemies. Now, here's one that ought to really resonate. Those that hate you, they shall rule over you. And you'll flee when no one pursues you. Hell, you'll be thinking there's a monkeypox coming. Booga, 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 run for the hills, put on your mask, and oh yeah, take the latest poison poke. And he says, and here's where I think it gets interesting, and I'll pause at this point, because this begins the sequence of what I call the 7 times 7 times 7 times 7 when it comes to curses. He said, still, in spite of all this, if you will not for these things listen to me, hear and obey, hearken unto me. That's the old English word, but it really fits better. Then I will chastise you 7 times more for your sins. Now, this is just the first of the 7 times. Here's what he'll do. I will break the pride of your power. I'll make your heavens as iron, your earth as brass. Your strength will be spent in vain. Your land won't yield her produce. The trees won't yield their fruit. And it's just going to get worse from there. Now, as I read that, and I read about breaking the pride of your power, I'm thinking, how? Those that hate you rule over you. What have we seen with the United States military over the last couple of years? When it comes to this culture of death, right? People that know better have now been forced out of the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. I believe in the God of the Bible. Whoop, you're out of here, one way or the other. There have been none, zero, nada, religious exemptions offered to the mandatory Zyklon B injections. Isn't it funny, folks? These are kids, basically in the prime of life, healthy young adults, typically the average soldier or sailor in their 20s or even younger in some cases. They don't suffer from heart attacks or strokes or myocarditis or pericarditis. Well, at least not until now. And they didn't have a concern about COVID either. Isn't that funny? But now that they've been poison poked, what does the Creator say about it? I will break the pride of your power. Yeah, I've destroyed, whether we realize it or not yet, the Navy has been destroyed. The Army is being destroyed. Special Forces, well, those that haven't resigned, they're going to find that they may have had their health destroyed. We had a famous incident, not famous in the waste stream, but just famous among those of us that are paying attention, where an Army flight physician, like so many flight physicians that know what's going on, says, hey, you know, a pilot, helicopter pilot in the Army's case, that takes the poison poke isn't fit to fly. They're not airworthy. They got no business being in command of a helicopter because they'll probably crash it if something happens to them. The pride of America's power, folks, has been destroyed. All in all, if we step back and just ask ourselves what's going on here, yes, we've been warned about it. Yes, we're certainly seeing what's been described in Scripture playing out. But the Bible puts it this way. I've laid before you this day life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life. What's been the bottom line of all of this? America, whether we like it or not, has chosen death. A culture of death has destroyed the public indoctrination centers, turned them into cesspools, and now they're openly killing kids and dancing on their graves, and they want to do that to the rest of America too. Step T-1 is to make sure that Americans are disarmed, and then all the rest of the stuff that Scripture's also warned us about. Yeah, we know what's going to happen. The mark of the beast, the Zyklon B passport. You won't be allowed to buy or sell or get on the internet or travel or do anything that we've already seen playing out if you don't have your poison poke, if you don't take the mark. Isn't it funny? That's what it's called when somebody is illiterate and they can't write their name. Make their mark. Somehow it is, I guess, fitting that all these things kind of go together. The culture of death is the absolute opposite, the abomination that we're seeing taught of what it is that ought to be done. And we have a stark choice to make, folks. The Bible says choose life. Similarly, we're also told to choose this day whom you will serve. And it's never been more important. It's time. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.